is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Coach Corey Harris from the Beijing Royal Fighters CBA team, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast. Let's get into it.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. We're jumping on tonight to talk some NBA, although I'm not sure there is very much NBA to talk. But before we do, just want to give a quick shout out to the Quest for the Best created by Matt Issa that we posted both on the Quest for the Best feed and our Hoopheads pod feed today. So hopefully you got a chance to check out at least chapter one of the Quest for the Best, where Matt is taking a deep dive into the top 10 players in the NBA. I already got a little quibble with him because he left Wilt out of the top 10, which I'm not sure it's even possible to do. But please check that out. It's going to generate some interesting conversation, and we'll have to, at some point when this series is over, maybe jump on and be able to debate again and revisit our top 10 players of all time that we did a couple years ago with Dan Menigan. I know Dan wants to jump on and do that. He thinks Durant's moved up in his top 10, so we'll have to figure that out. But anyway.
Yeah, we'll definitely, I can definitely arrange that since, you know, I talk to Dan on a regular basis, so I can definitely arrange that. So we'll I think maybe right before the season starts, maybe we have to revisit that, Mike.
Yeah, we could put that in as part of maybe our lead up to the season with our previews. So we'll have to see how that goes. But
yep. All right. So on that note, I think there's really only one topic that we want to talk about, and then we're going to do one of our little gimmick things today because there wasn't much to talk about today. They announced that the replay reviews in the last 2 minutes are no longer going to be booth/initiated on any play that they want, that coaches will only be able to challenge. So we're not going to have any more of these, like, 40-minute last 2 minutes. And I'm all for it, Mike. I'm really all for it. This is exciting to me because I really think they had killed the vibe at the end of the game big time with these reviews. I will say my only thing is I don't like the rule that if a coach challenges and they only get one challenge, if the coach challenges, they don't get like another challenge. I feel like that should be a rule, but I understand why it's not a rule. But I kind of feel like if the referees make a bad call and you challenge it, you kind of don't just deserve the thing. You should deserve another challenge, don't you think? Or is that just going to be too minutiae, like, dealing with too much of the minutia, do you think?
So we're talking about the last 2 minutes only, correct?
Yes, the last 2 minutes. So there's going to be no more reviews on any plays in the last 2 minutes of the game unless a coach challenges. Obviously, there are the exceptions to the rule, like if there was a reviewing for a possible flagrant or something like that, that will still be a reviewable play. But like the out of bounds, like that ridiculous play where the ball deflected, and I don't even remember who that was off of. You know which one I'm talking about? The one that reflected, it was clearly off of the guy's fingertips, but
yeah, there were several of those where anytime you've played basketball in the last 75 years and somebody hits the ball out of bounds, it's out of bounds on the guy who hit the ball away from the dribbler, not the guy whose finger it may have been touching last as the guy clearly knocks it out of bounds. My thoughts on this are, I agree with you from a standpoint of if a coach is going to challenge, because you think about 2 minutes left in the game, there could be several critical plays that could warrant a coach challenging, right? So you could have a challenge with a minute and a half to go that could be a huge play, win that challenge, and then you could have a completely egregious error with 12 seconds to go that if you already used your challenge, it's gone. So I can see where a coach who's unsuccessful with their challenge loses it and then doesn't have any more. But if you win your challenge, it seems like you then should not lose that challenge. The general spirit of this is obviously 100% correct. There's no way that what we had before, where every single play was being reviewed for 2 or 3 minutes, as you said, it just totally killed the flow and the excitement of the last 2 minutes of a game. Bad enough with the number of timeouts that we have and all that kind of thing. But when you add in instant replay being initiated from outside of the confines of the actual game and the participants, that's where it started to get a little bit ridiculous. But I do think that a coach who wins their challenge should be given another challenge and should be given as many as they need as long as they keep winning them.
Yep, 100%. I just think they have to, like, maybe this was something that they'll maybe eventually, and they didn't want to, like, go away from one thing and then bring something else on. Maybe eventually they'll adjust this. But I definitely think it needs to be, and I always thought it this way, even with the ridiculous amount of challenge, you know, that happened at the end of the game.
Yeah, if you win the challenge, you should keep your challenge.
100%. Like, I just think of the way the NFL does it, where they get two challenges. If they win, now they have theirs, you know, they win two challenges, they get a third one situation. And, you know, that doesn't happen too often anyways, because I think the NFL, it winning a challenge sometimes is questionable. But,
you know. Well, the odds are that it's not going to probably come up in most games.
Yeah.
You're not going to get two challengeable situations in the last 2 minutes. But there are certain cases where if it's a tight game and something happens, like I said, with a minute and a half to go that is critically important at that very moment in the game, and a coach challenges it and then they win, and then come the end of the game, there's 5 seconds to go and the ball is clearly out of bounds off of someone or there's some egregious error, and now you have no way of fixing that if you're the coach. That, to me, seems wrong. That seems like a situation that the NBA would want to avoid, where you have an error that is clearly made, and yet there's no mechanism in place to fix it, which is, I think, the original intent of the instant replay rule, is to get rid of that, right? I mean, that's why you put it in place in the first place. And now you're taking away... Yeah, you're getting rid of the delays, which everybody has to be for. I don't know anybody who watches the NBA that was like, oh, I love all of these delays. And yet, I can see in this situation where if the coach successfully challenges something in the early part of that 2 minutes, and then there's a last second play or a last 10 second play where something happens that needs to be challenged and that coach doesn't have one anymore, that's the situation I think that the NBA would be looking to avoid. So I'm kind of surprised that they've limited it to one challenge. I guess if I'm a coach, do I keep that one in my back pocket until the last 10 seconds? It'll be interesting to see how coaches execute that and whether there are coaches challenging in the first minute of that last 2 minutes, or they're waiting for that potential last second game deciding play and keeping the challenge in their back pocket. I don't know what they're going to do or how it's going to work, but it seems like it would be fair to be able to have a challenge again if you're successful with your first one. So that's my take on it.
Well, we agree, Mike. We agree tonight.
All right, that's good.
Okay, are you ready for the gimmick tonight?
I'm ready for the gimmick. Throw it at me.
All right, so our gimmick tonight is a would you rather. And I couldn't really frame this in any other way to Mike as we're just going to do would you rather. So I've come up with a list of about 6 or 7 different situations. Some are about certain players. Some are a personal thing, Mike. And okay. Some are just ridiculous and ludicrous. So let's
all right,
be,
good.
So
this
let's
sounds be, fun. This sounds fun. I'm ready. So, I don't know if anybody else will want to listen to it, but I'm ready.
Well, I think this is a good one. We'll start with one. Would you rather witness Wilt Chamberlain score 100 points or be any Game 7 in NBA Finals history?
I'd rather see Wilt score 100.
Okay, I didn't expect you to go that way, Mike. I'll be clear. I didn't really think you would go that way. I thought you would say you would pick a Game 7. And I left it open-ended letting you pick a Game 7, any Game 7, you know. I didn't give you a specific one. So can you explain yourself?
Yes, I think, okay, so for me, it would obviously, I think, come down to would I want it to be at, Michael Jordan never played in a Game 7 in the finals, right? So I'm not getting to see Michael Jordan in a Game 7 in the NBA Finals. So that's off the table. So my really only choice is Game 7 of the 2016 NBA Finals, Cavs-Warriors, which was not necessarily the most well-played game, but obviously a game that you and I and everyone else from the city of Cleveland enjoyed immensely. And it was a game that I never thought that I would see in my lifetime, a Cleveland team winning an NBA championship. And yet I think about my experience watching that game. So I was sitting on my couch with my entire family who, other than my daughter, are at most borderline basketball fans in terms of watching. And I had a blast sitting on my couch in front of my TV watching that game. I remember pounding the ottoman in front of my couch as LeBron was passing up shots in the fourth quarter and me screaming, why isn't he shooting it? Anyway, it was a good experience for me. That was a positive experience. The opportunity to go and see Wilt score 100 where there was only maybe 4,000 people in that building. And
Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Correct. And there's no video whatsoever of that game. Really, the only thing that I ever associate with that game in
the
terms
picture.
Of media, the picture of him sitting in the locker room holding up the piece of paper with 100 written on it. That's the only thing that, to my knowledge, exists in any way, shape, or form. I mean, obviously, there are probably tickets out there from the game, but there's nothing else that I'm aware of. So to be able to sit in on that game and watch a guy score 100 points in a professional game, to watch him shoot 28 for 32 from the line when this is a guy who shot below 50% for his career. I mean, to me, just the historical significance of that, I think far outweighs me being at any NBA Game 7. I know it sounds crazy, but just because of the historical significance and because of the fact that so few people got to see it, whereas if I'm sitting in the Oakland Coliseum in 2016 watching, I guess Oracle, sorry, not the Oakland Coliseum, but I'm sitting in Oracle, yeah, it would be great, would have been fantastic, but I got to experience that game already. And even though I wasn't in the building, I did not get to experience the Wilt game. So I would rather see the 100-point Wilt game.
Okay. I agree with you, Mike. And I think, like you said, that's something that no one has any video of. Like, I mean, I think you could find some really grainy Wilt Chamberlain videos somewhere, but it's probably from later in his career, right? I mean, there's not really any good video of him playing basketball. Like, really good video, right? Am I wrong?
There's some, but most of the extensive Wilt video is Wilt when he was with the Lakers.
He was
definitely past his prime by that point. When you see prime Wilt Chamberlain and you watch him run and you watch him jump and you just watch the things that he was able to do, he was absolutely incredible. And I just think the opportunity to see prime Wilt, to see him score 100, and you can say whatever you want about the guys he was playing with. Clearly, the level of athlete that he was competing against isn't the same as the level of athletes that guys today are competing against. But I don't care who you are, what you are, where you are. When you score 100 points in a game against professionals, you're doing something. And the fact that there was only 4,000 people in that arena that actually have a real true-to-life memory of him doing that, and that there's no video, to be able to sit in that arena and witness that, to me, that trumps anything else that I don't know if there's honestly a game that I'd rather sit in just from a historical perspective than that. Because any great Michael Jordan game, yeah, it would have been great to be in the building for different games that he had over the years, but I can see all those, like everything that Jordan did, I can go back and watch. I can't go back and watch everything that Wilt did. So for that reason, I think I'd want to be in the building for that 100-point game.
All right. Well, good. That was the first good. That was a good first one, wasn't it, Mike?
That was good. Okay. I like it.
All right. You're not going to like this one.
Okay.
Would you rather be teammates with James Harden for one season or teammates with Russell Westbrook for 5 seasons?
Oh, man. All right. Well,
that's a good one, isn't it? This is a good one.
This is a good one. So I have to be with Harden for one season?
Or Russell Westbrook for 5 seasons.
Or I have to be with Russell Westbrook for 5 seasons. Oh, man. Oh, man. I think I got to take my medicine for a year and then get out. I really do. I don't know if I can play. Look, I think I was more positive about Russ earlier in his career, but I think as his time has worn on, Well, I've come to the realization that I don't think he's a guy, and I guess it'll be proven out this year or disproven with the Lakers. I don't know that you can win with Russ in a major role handling the ball and being the guy. I just don't think you could do it. When he was in Oklahoma City with Durant, I think they came close because there was at least, it still wasn't completely balanced. And in all honesty, as we all look back on it, the scale should have been tipping much further in favor of Durant than in favor of Westbrook. But in fact, even during their time together, Westbrook had the ball more and took more shots and just generally at the end of the game was the guy who was making decisions. I don't know that I want to give up 5 years of my career and play next to Russ and know that I don't think that what he does translates to winning NBA championships. Can he make a team better that's not very good? Yes. Does he play hard? Yes. Does he have things about his game that you have to like? Yes. But I don't know that I personally would want to play with a guy, either one of them, that has the ball in their hands as much as either one of them does. And then in the case of Westbrook, I think the decision-making is questionable. In the case of Harden, we've said it many, many times, I just don't think that it's fun to play with a guy who has the ball all the time, pounds it, and then finally, if he can't do anything else, then he throws a pass to you and you're supposed to make the shot even though you haven't touched the ball for 20 seconds of the shot clock or you haven't touched the ball in 4 possessions. I just don't think that's a fun way to play. But if I get that 1 year out of the way and then I can move on to greener pastures as opposed to being stuck for 5 years with Westbrook, I think given an equal amount of time, if the equation or the would you rather was, would you rather play 1 year with Harden or would you rather play 1 year with Westbrook? I think I'd rather play 1 year with Westbrook.
That's the whole point that I gave 5 years of Westbrook.
I understand. I understand.
So what's the so what's the breaking point, Mike? What's the breaking point?
How many years of Westbrook?
Yes. Is it just the 1 year? Like, for you to do 2 years of Westbrook or 1 year of Harden, would you choose 1 year?
I think I'd still choose 1 year of Harden. Okay. Give me my 1 year and get out.
Okay.
And then all right. I think any extra tilts the scales any extra tilts the scales and I go Harden. If they're equal, I probably pick to play with Westbrook. But any extra time, I want to get out of both of those situations as fast as I can. So okay, I'm riding with Harden on this question.
That's fair. Okay. I agree. I would do a 1 year situation. I've never been a huge Harden. I've never been a Harden fan. You know, we talk about this at length, but I would probably, early on in Harden's career, I was more of a Harden fan than I was a Westbrook fan. When Westbrook won that MVP with a team that was barely over 500, I thought that was the most ridiculous crime against whatever. Like, it was ridiculous that he won. And listen, I respect Westbrook. I know that he works hard, and you know that he works hard, right? Mike, you agree, right? He works hard, but I don't necessarily know that I want him on my team. And same goes for – I wouldn't say that Harden works as hard as Westbrook does. But I don't know. I think I would take the 1 year of Harden for sure. All right, Mike. Would you rather your team win one championship and be pitiful for the rest of your life, or have a team be competitive year in and year out but never win a championship?
I think you take the championship every single time. And I say that only knowing that the experience that we recently had with the Cavs. And sure, it was fun to get to the finals every year for 4 years in a row, but it wasn't that fun to lose the finals. I got to be honest with you. The watching your team when you're truly invested in your team as a fan, in a lot of ways, it's kind of excruciating. Would you agree?
Oh, I will say this, like, the excruciating, like, when I go back and think about the 2015 finals, I was just so happy that they got to the finals. And I think, and then obviously in 2016 when we won, but 2017 and 2018 was a super excruciating. I really felt like 2018 was the most excruciating, Mike. And I think it was just because I knew we were all so outmatched, even though we were in the finals. I just knew, like we've talked about at length, LeBron literally carried the corpses of those players to the NBA Finals. And I truly think that I know winning the 2016 Finals is his greatest achievement, but I think carrying that roster, that 2018 roster, Mike, like, you go back and you look at that roster of 2018, that roster is really bad. The fact that they got to the finals.
He's carried two absolutely atrocious.
Well, 2007. Right. And but here's the thing, 2007, and I don't want to like diminish 2007, but I almost feel like 2007 was a fluke. And if it wasn't for that Detroit game, obviously they wouldn't have ever gotten there. And he threw them on their back. And but you also look at like that 2007, like, we got swept by San Antonio. Like, they didn't even, and I know they got swept in 2018. But and I think if you took that 2018 roster and played it against the 2007 roster, I don't know. Do you think that 2007 roster is better than the 2018, or is the 2018 better than 2007? Do you even remember who was on the 2007 Cavs, Mike?
I mean, I don't really want to go through man for man who was on there, but it was Sasha Pavlovich and Booby Gibson and
Scott Pollard, Larry Hughes, Shannon Brown, Dwayne Jones, Daniel Booby Gibson, Zydrunas Ilgauskas, Damon Jones, Drew Gooden, some guy I've never heard of, Demetrius Nichols, who's that? And Vergeau. I mean,
are we excluding the LeBron from each one of those two rosters?
Yes. Well, let's take LeBron off. Who would you rather have?
I mean, it's close. Both are equally atrocious, I would say. I'm not sure that I'd pick one over the other. I guess I might pick the 2018 team, because they had some guys with some playoff experience that had been there before. So maybe I picked that group only because they had have a couple guys that have been to the finals previously, whereas that 2017 was all either young guys or journeymen or guys who had never been there before. But I don't know. I mean, both of those teams are bad. Let's put it that way.
So I guess, so you would take the championship and be pitiful for the rest of your life. Like, so,
well, in my lifetime, I barely remember at all the miracle of Richfield. Barely. But prior to the miracle of Richfield, the Cavs were pitiful. After the miracle of Richfield, the Cavs were pitiful again until
93, 94, 95. Till
the Doherty Price and
then Nance. In 96, 97, when they got all those rookie guys, that was a good team. That was a fun team to watch.
So those teams, the Doherty Price teams, were very, very frustrating to watch because they had one gear that they played in the regular season and they had the same gear in the playoffs and just never felt like they could ramp up their game the way other teams could, and that ended up costing them in the playoffs.
Well, they also didn't have Michael Jordan on their team. That also hurt them slightly.
I understand. I get it. But I guess my point here is that then after that era, you're not really good again in any significant way until LeBron gets here.
Listen, LeBron, I have a question, Mike. I have a question. I have a theoretical question. If Z doesn't get hurt, is that young Cavs team competitive or no?
The Derek Anderson, Brevin Knight team?
Yeah, the team that had four rookies starting in the rookie All-Star game.
No.
You don't think that team's competitive if Z's okay.
Competitive meaning what?
Like playoff bound, like in the conversation for like the 3 and 4 seed. Yeah. Like meddling.
No,
I mean, okay.
I mean, look at the who of that group, and now I'm drawing a blank besides Derek Anderson and Brevin Knight. Who else was in that group?
Bobby Mills. Bobby Phils. Bob Sura. What was his name? Tyrone Hill. Come on, that team was good.
Who else had a meaningful NBA career of those guys?
Chris Mills?
You thinking Chris Mills or Bobby Phils?
No, there was Chris Mills and Bobby Phils. Wasn't that the team?
So Phils and Mills, I don't know. I can't remember who was on what team back in
the day. Scotty Brooks was on that team.
Okay, so which of those guys had a significant
Sean
NBA
Kemp?
Career?
Sean Kemp? Danny Ferry? Come on, Mike.
Which of those guys had a significant impact in a career on a winning team?
Sean Kemp.
Yeah, but that was before he was here. Kemp's first year he was here, he was really good. He was really good. He wasn't as good as he was in Seattle. And he had maybe a year, maybe two at the most.
Wesley Person, Mike. Come on.
As I said, none of these guys played a significant role. So even
Cedric Henderson? What about Cedric Henderson?
Cedric Henderson, I think, went to Georgia. If
he went to Memphis.
Memphis?
I've got it pulled up on my
phone. Anyway. All right. Anyway, my point here is that no, that team would not have been good. I mean, none of those guys had a significant NBA career. All of them were at best journeymen. At best.
Zadrunas had a good significant career, I feel.
He did, but are you building a second or third round playoff team around Z as your best player? Even if he's not hurt, even if he's not compromised.
What about Vitaly Potapenko?
I don't think so. I don't think so. What was the original question? Oh, whether or not we'd want our team to win one title or be contenders. I would want my team to win one title. And then if they're terrible, they're terrible. Because here's the thing. Even if they're terrible, and I guess it comes down to, am I all knowing that they're going to be terrible? So do I know going into the season that no matter what they do, they're going to be terrible? And I know they're going to be terrible 20 years from now, which means every year they're going to make the wrong draft pick and they're going to make bad trades. So if I know that, maybe the equation changes a little. But if I don't know they're going to be terrible, if it's just karma that is throwing this out to me, then I still, even if they're awful, I still have hope that they're going to make the right draft pick or do a trade that's going to be successful. Whereas if my team's always in contention, but they're never quite good enough to get over the hump, to me, that would get eminently frustrating, which is how when I look back on the history of some of the Cavs teams that didn't win, whether it was the Doherty Price era, whether it's some of the LeBron teams that didn't get over the hump, you're frustrated. Was it fun when they lost to Orlando in the conference semifinals? Was that fun? Was that enjoyable? No. I mean, yeah, you get to watch LeBron over the course of the season, so it's hard to complain.
There was that one moment in that standpoint. Series that was good, but other than that...
Right, the buzzer beater. Yeah. And LeBron was incredible in that series, but nonetheless, it's still frustrating to watch your own team. If you were watching that from the outside, you're like, oh, that was fun. LeBron was great, and what a great season. But if you're actually dialed in and rooting for that team, I think coming close over and over again would be far worse than just being bad, especially if you were bad and you didn't know for sure that you were going to be bad, that there was still this outsized hope. Look at the Cleveland Browns. How long have people been hoping for them to be good? And it is what it is. Give me that one title. I already got my one. I don't need any more.
All right. That's fair. That's a fair assessment, Mike. I will accept that assessment.
Are you tired of slipping and sliding on the court and sticky sheets just aren't giving you grip? Grip Spritz solves this problem without having to lick your hand to clean your shoes. Grip Spritz is used by countless AAU, high school and college programs, semi-pro teams, as well as NCAA athletes and G League players. Unlike other products, Grip Spritz has solutions for individual players, not just entire teams. We've used Grip Spritz at our Head Start basketball camps and players love it. To keep you and your team from slipping and sliding, visit gripspritz.net to learn more.
Your life is on the line, Mike. You have to choose between Shaquille O'Neal and Ben Simmons to make a free throw. Who are you choosing and why?
I'll take Shaq.
Okay.
What's so funny about that? You want to hear my what?
I was so confident. You were so confident in taking Shaq. That's a problem. Problem, Ben Simmons.
It's a problem for Ben. I thought you were going to say it was a problem for me. It's a problem for Simmons. All right, so let me give you my reasons. So my reasons are, I guess, twofold, because the second reason kind of goes to both players' mental psyche. So one, and I have no idea if this is true or not, but I know that Shaq has claimed over the years that he always made free throws in big moments, which I'm sure is not true. However, I do feel like there were times where I watched Shaq and he would occasionally make some free throws. And I will say that I don't ever remember him being afraid to go to the free throw line. I remember some of those finals when they Lakers three-peated in the early 2000s where he had stat lines where he was at the line 18, 20, 22 times in a game. And if you're going to the line that many times in a game, now granted, teams guarded Shaq a little bit differently than they guard your average player. So they're grabbing him, they're fouling him, they're pushing him. They know he's a poor foul shooter, so he's going to get fouled a lot. And he really is playing close to the basket, so it's not like Simmons where he can be out on the perimeter doing other things. But the fact of the matter is Shaq wasn't afraid to go to the line. And Simmons, in this season, was clearly afraid to go to the line. And when you're afraid to go to the line, it completely changes the way you play. It completely changes the way you approach going up to the line. You can be a bad free throw shooter, but as long as you're not afraid, you at least have a chance of making the shot. If you're afraid to go up there, that makes it really, really tough. And so Simmons, I would not at this point, until Simmons shows me differently, I'll take Shaq 100 times out of 100. Do you know what? He might only make 50%.
Yeah, so Shaq's free throw percentage, I don't know if this will sway you or not. Shaq's career free throw percentage was 52.7%. Ben Simmons is at 59.7%. That's not changing your mind whatsoever, right?
No, because if you're asking me who would I have wanted to shoot the free throws 3 years ago, then I would have taken Simmons. If you're asking me who I'd want to take the free throws
now,
today, meaning whatever, I'm assuming Shaq is just at some point during his career. I don't think his free throws fluctuated much based on his mental state.
No, he fluctuated between 60 and like 48%, but that 48% was later in his career. So
he was generally bad. I mean, he was generally bad throughout his entire career. Whereas Simmons has been, I would say, gone from poor to absolutely atrocious. And I do not want the absolutely atrocious guy at the line who's afraid to shoot free throws. Give me a guy who's not scared, and I don't believe Shaq was ever scared to go up and shoot free throws. He just wasn't very good at it.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair. I don't know that I have a great answer on this one. I think for me, I probably would lean towards Shaq because, like you said, there were big moments that he made free throws. But I'm like, even like, I don't think I want either of these guys shooting free throws for my life, I suppose.
I think you just have to take it from your gut. I think you just hear the two names and you just got to pick the guy that you think makes sense.
Listen, I'll take Shaq as long as he promises not to make another Kazam.
Okay, there you go.
Have you watched that movie, Mike?
Space Jam 3?
No, Kazam. Did you ever watch Kazam?
I'm just kidding. I may have seen a clip of it at some point, but I can pretty much guarantee I did not watch an entire film with Shaq called Kazam.
Okay. All right. I've got one more good one, Mike, I think. I don't know if that sounds good. We'll do this one and then we'll see what you think.
Okay.
If you got to suit up or play in one in one of these two places, where would you play? At Madison Square Garden or the old Boston Garden? It's not the new, like they've got it, they redid it. So the old Boston Garden or Madison Square Garden? Mike, where would you suit up?
This is an easy one for me because I hated the Boston Garden growing up. And I remember telling my dad, you're going to laugh. I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before, but I know I've told you that I hated Larry Bird as a kid. I absolutely despise the Celtics. And I used to tell my dad, I'd be like, I hate that place, Boston. Look at those fans. They're so obnoxious. I remember saying that, look, everybody in the crowd, thinking back to that time, like everybody in the crowd's white. Like there's no African-American people in the stands in the Boston Garden. And there were so many big victories that the Celtics had and all the teams that I liked were teams that the Celtics would beat, with the exception of the Bad Boy Pistons. But Magic's Lakers, Michael's Bulls, Doc's 76ers, those were all teams that when I was a kid, those were the teams I liked. So I fancied the players that I wanted to play like and be like were the guys that I had no chance of ever being like or playing like. So I probably would have been better served being a Larry Bird fan and trying to emulate my game after a guy like him than trying to watch Dr. J and Michael Jordan and thinking that I was going to somehow play like them. But in my own mind, those are the guys that I wanted to play like. I think because Bird's ability to do things seemed more attainable to me, whereas Jordan and Doc did things that obviously I could never in a zillion years dream about. So I hated the Celtics, but I remember telling my dad at one point that if they ever tear down the Boston Garden, that I wanted to be there so I could spit on it as it gets torn down. And I still remember having that conversation with my dad.
Do you think your dad would remember that conversation?
I don't know if he would or not. It's a good question. I'll have to ask him the next time I talk to him. But I clearly remember saying that to him because he and I would have these discussions all the time. And not that he was a huge Celtics fan, but he loved Larry Bird. And I just never, for whatever reason, just never never liked Larry Bird, despised the Celtics, despised the Boston Garden. So I guess my vote here is not necessarily a vote for playing in Madison Square Garden. It's more a vote of I wouldn't want to play in the Boston Garden just because of the disdain I had for it as a kid.
Okay, so
by default, I would choose Madison Square Garden.
So, okay, so here's my follow-up question to that, Mike. Would you, I originally had Madison Square Garden or Staples, but I was consulting with a few people, and they felt like Staples wasn't as iconic as those two because Staples is...
The Forum. You'd ask me about the Forum because that was, you know, that's what I grew up with as a Lakers fan.
Okay,
was the Forum.
So if I said MSG or the Forum, which would you go with?
Are you opening it up to any arena, or do I still have to choose between these two?
These two, MSG or the Forum.
I'd probably pick the Forum because I don't have any real connection to New York City or Madison Square Garden either. The Knicks, you had the Patrick Ewing Knicks, but for the most part, in my lifetime, the Knicks haven't been great. I'm too young to remember the 73 New York Knicks teams. So I don't have any particular affinity for New York City or connection. Same thing with the Garden. I've never been there. So I guess I would probably pick the Forum simply because I watched a lot more games as a kid on TV at the Forum than I did at Madison Square Garden. So I'd probably pick the Forum.
Okay, that's fair. Like I said, I just wanted to know, and that was what I originally had. So,
So I got another question for you.
Okay, go ahead.
And I don't know if you'll be able to answer it, or if I should just answer it, or whatever. The arena I'd probably most like to play in would probably be the United Center. So to run out with the Bulls intro for their starting five, with the music and the whole thing, and just the Jordan. That would be high on my list. I think the Spectrum in Philadelphia, because I grew up watching Doc and hearing, you probably don't remember, you remember the name Larry Zinkoff?
No.
So he was the Sixers PA announcer. So he would always, you got to look this up after we're done on the podcast. So when he would, Doc was always the last guy, and he would always go, number six, the Doctor, Julius Erving. Anyway, so they had a great starting lineup. So when I think about where I'd like to play, I think about those running out as part of the starting lineup. That was a much bigger thing, I think, when I was a kid, running out for the starting lineup. Like, I remember reenacting all the different play-by-play guys that I would hear. And so I guess when I think about places I'd like to play, the United Center because of the Bulls, the Spectrum because of the Sixers, and maybe the Forum because of the Lakers. Those would probably be my top three. And then what about a college arena? You got a college arena?
Oh, Cameron. It's Cameron. It's not even close. I don't like them, but I would like to play there.
Okay, yeah, I couldn't pick that. I'd probably pick to play an old Carmichael Auditorium, which was Carolina's gym, pre-Dean Dome.
Can I pick Old Hickory? Can I pick that? Is that an option or no?
That's a high school, but you could pick it.
I'd like to pick that one.
All right. Or maybe Pauley Pavilion, UCLA. Yeah. Think about that when you think about iconic places to play.
But I don't like Duke, but I'd have to pick Cameron, I think.
And I got to play at St. John Arena on the campus of Ohio State when I was a freshman. I played like 2 minutes in the game, but that's a great arena. Yeah, I wish that the Ohio State High School Athletic Association would go back to playing
State tournament. Why? Let's go to play Dayton. Let's go to Dayton, Mike, because that's really where everyone wants to go.
It'd be much better to play it at St. John's. Let's put it that way.
Hell, listen, it would be better to play it at the Wolstein Center than play it in Dayton.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm just
it should be in Columbus just because it's a central location. So either play it at the Shot or play it at St. John's. But yeah, I don't think being in Dayton doesn't make a lot of sense.
They moved the wrestling back to the Shot this year, at least. I mean, I know that doesn't really affect us, but this has been a deliberation going on. I've been talking to our varsity coach is about Delisio and Eaton about why they're doing this, and they have no clue. So
yeah, I don't think anybody does. I'm not sure anybody does. But St. John Arena is a great place, great college basketball venue.
Okay, Mike, did you have any would-you-rathers you wanted to ask me? You want? You got one? Do you have any? Or
I got one. I got one for you.
Okay, we'll do one, and then maybe we'll revisit this next week if we don't have a lot of topics to discuss. We can.
All right, mine crosses sports.
Oh no.
Goes back to our text thread on Sunday.
Oh God.
Would you rather have the ball in James Harden's hands with under 10 seconds to go, game 7 of the NBA Finals, your team is down 1, or would you rather have 2 minutes left on the clock, your team has to go 75 yards for a touchdown to win the Super Bowl, and Baker Mayfield is your quarterback?
Well, that's a good one. I would probably I would probably right now, Mike, take Baker, and here's why.
Oh my God.
Here's why.
Because he can hand the ball to Nick Chubb and maybe he'll run it 75 yards for a touchdown.
I think it's hard to compare sports, and here's why, Mike. Because okay. I think I know what Harden is going to do, and he's going to just take a shot, and maybe it's going to go in, maybe it's not, but he's got a much bigger track record of failing in the big moment. Baker hasn't have a big enough track record yet for me to make a ill-advised statement about him. Listen, I will go on the record, and I know I said this in my text messages with you. Their offense, their one offensive lineman was hurt after like the first two quarter, after the first quarter. So they had guys in there that probably not that they should have not expected to play because our linemen seem to be made of glass the last year and a half. But they didn't have a lot of preseason playing. We were right there with them. We didn't have our starting safety. Our other safety is an idiot and punched the friggin' coach. And I don't care that the coach shoved him first. Okay, so the game...
That coach had to be ejected. How that guy was not ejected...
Yeah, that was ridiculous. Was completely ridiculous. Which, by the way, they did fine him. I don't know if you saw that. They fined him an undisclosed amount, I saw.
Yeah, it should have been higher, whatever it was.
He should have been ejected. But, so... Patrick Mahomes made that 75-yard touchdown pass that was ridiculous, okay? And then our punter can't catch the ball.
All right, these are all extraneous.
No, so I'm telling issues. You right now, I would rather have Baker have the ball right now than I would James Harden.
Okay, let me just I just want to put this to you. With what did we get the ball back with the last time? 2 minutes to go, 2:30, something like that. And keep in mind, this was the second time he had the ball in the last 10 minutes with a chance to go down the field and take the lead.
But the previous possession before that... No, well, that's unfair, though. That's unfair because
they scored a touchdown,
and then immediately afterwards, they scored a 75-yard touchdown. So you can't hold that. He did his job. He responded to the first touchdown.
But then he had two more chances to respond.
But the possession before that, he didn't do anything bad. What's something that he did bad in that previous possession?
Okay, let me ask you this.
The one that Nick Chubb fumbled it's his fault that Nick Chubb fumbled the ball?
No, that was 3 or 4 possessions earlier. I'm saying he had 2 possessions in the fourth quarter where they could have gone down the field and taken a lead, and neither one of them resulted in anything. So if you have there to me, there's 2 tiers of quarterbacks, right? There's guys who can win you games. So who are quarterbacks in the last 10 years that can win you games?
There's one, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers.
But there's more.
Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, although the other day, listen, Aaron Rodgers.
No, not Aaron Rodgers the other day, but yes, Aaron
Drew
Rodgers.
Breeze,
maybe.
Mahomes,
clearly.
Yes, yeah. You could make the argument for certain situations, Matt Ryan, not when they're up 28-3 in the Super Bowl.
There's not many. I guess my point is there's not many guys, but the very best quarterbacks and maybe this isn't even a knock on Baker, but the very best quarterbacks, when you give them the ball with 2.5 minutes to go and their team needs to score, and again, this is probably a misperception. They probably don't score as often as I think they do, but if one of those quarterbacks that we just named got the ball with 2.5 minutes to go and needed to score a touchdown to win a game, I would be stunned if they didn't at least get the ball down the field where they're at the 15-yard line with a throw into the end zone to try to win the game.
Okay, Mike, so here's my question. Right now, name quarterbacks in the NFL that you would rather have over Baker Mayfield. Go.
Well, I got to pull up a list of who all the quarterbacks. I got to pull up the teams.
Well, I would say that you want Brady. I would say that you want Aaron Rodgers. I would say that you probably could make an argument. Some people might make an argument for Lamar Jackson. I would not be that guy. I would not vote for Lamar Jackson. I think some people would probably say Justin.
Did Lamar make that play running out of the bathroom last year? Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you'd rather have Lamar than Baker?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, you're crazy.
I want a guy who can run, too.
Well, he's going to be running all right. He's running, all right, from, the, so I'm go- he's so running I'm going- from the COVID. He's gotten COVID twice.
All right, let's start in the AFC. I'd rather have Lamar Jackson.
Okay.
I know everybody loves Josh Allen. I'm not sure. I'm just going through alphabetically. I'm not sure I'd rather have Josh Allen. I think Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen are very similar. Joe Burrow.
He's already torn an ACL.
I'm not sure I wouldn't rather have Joe Burrow, but it's close. The Broncos, whoever their quarterback is, I'd rather have Mayfield. The Texans, who are they rolling out there now? Tyrod Taylor.
You'd rather have Baker.
So I think I'd rather have Baker. I'd rather have Baker than anybody the Colts are rolling out. I'm not a big Trevor Lawrence guy, but I don't know. I guess at this point, you'd probably rather take Baker. Mahomes, you'd rather have. I'd rather have Baker than David Carr. I'd rather have Herbert for the Chargers than Baker. I'd rather have Baker than Tua. I'd probably rather have Baker than Mac Jones. I'd probably rather have Baker than Zach Wilson. I'd probably rather have Baker at this stage of his career than Ben Roethlisberger. I'd probably rather have Baker than... what's the guy from Tennessee now? I'm drawing a blank.
Tannehill,
thank you. All right, let's go to the NFC.
Okay, so that you named three quarterbacks there that you would rather all have right. with Baker, okay?
Okay, Arizona. It's close with Kyler Murray. I'd rather have Baker than Matt Ryan at this point in his career. I'd rather have Baker than Sam Darnold. I'd rather have Baker than Justin Fields at this point because I don't know what he is. Dak Prescott, I might rather have Dak. The Lions, I'd rather have him than Jared Goff. I'd rather have Aaron Rodgers. I'd probably rather have Stafford. I definitely would rather have Baker than Kirk Cousins. I'd rather have Baker than Jameis Winston. I'd rather have Baker.
Famous Jameis, 5 touchdown passes.
Than Daniel Jones. I'd rather have Baker than Jalen Hurts. I'd rather have Baker than Garoppolo. I'd rather have Russell Wilson. I'd rather have Brady. And I'd rather have Baker than Heineke or whoever else the other.
Okay, so you named eight. So with that statement, Baker's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL.
Okay, so let me say this. He's one of the best of the guys who are just short of a guy who's going to win you games. And what I mean by that is I just don't think he has not shown – to me in any way, shape, or form that against good teams in those moments where those best guys, I would have full confidence in them moving their teams down the field. I don't feel that
way.
So
that first Pittsburgh game doesn't count for anything last. The Pittsburgh playoff game last year doesn't mean anything then.
They were up 28-0.
I'm just asking you a question.
I'm just saying that's not like a clutch performance. That's not like John Elway in the drive. Going 98 yards down the field.
So that first game that he came into in his first game in his NFL career when he had a terrible coach.
That was his best game of his career maybe against the Jets. That was maybe his best game of his career.
I was at that game, Mike.
I know you were. That was maybe the best game. There was more energy in that stadium than there ever has
been. Well, that's because J.R. Smith took off his shirt and started throwing it around.
I remember all that. Okay, well, I don't want to make this a whole NFL podcast, but look, I think Baker is just short of – being a guy that can you win a Super Bowl with him? Maybe, but the rest of your team better be really, really good because he's not winning a Super Bowl based on what I've seen to this point. He's not going to be the difference in you winning or losing. He might win one because the rest of his team ends up being good, but I don't see him being a guy down six with 2 minutes to go in the Super Bowl and just willing his team down the field. I don't see that. So that's the only point I'm trying to make. I'm not trying to say he's terrible because he's not.
Do you know how far we've come as Browns fans, Mike? We're arguing about whether a guy could win us a Super Bowl, not whether a guy should be the starting quarterback. So I'm okay with this conversation. I will
say
that.
It's fine. It's fine. The position's in much better hands than it's been in 20 years. But
beggars can't be choosers, Mike. Come on now.
When you have a good team, which it feels like the Browns should have a good team.
Let me ask you an honest question, Mike. Right. Going into the game on Sunday, did you think the Browns would win? The answer is no. There's zero chance.
Yeah, the answer is probably no.
Answer is no. Listen.
But it still comes down to when you have two chances in the fourth quarter to move down the field, when you have the type of offensive talent that team has, and you can't even move the ball to get yourself in position to have a shot at the end zone in two possessions, that's unacceptable. That's unacceptable.
Well, here's my question, Mike. Why do we go away from running the football? I mean, I don't really want to get this. We're turning this into an NFL podcast. The Browns should have never gone away from running the football. I know Chubb fumbled the football, but you can't go away from running with the ball. That's in our DNA. That's in the way that they are going to play this game this year. I guarantee you, Houston Texans game on Sunday, okay? They're going to come out the first possession. They're going to start with two runs, Mike. I'm going to tell you right now because that was where they went wrong is. They took not – and it's and that's on the play calling, in my opinion. They still had 2.5 minutes left in that game, and they're throwing the football. We had plenty of time. I think we had two timeouts or one timeout left still. Like,
if your quarterback's good, you got to be able to throw the ball in that situation. You got to go 80 yards in 2 minutes.
You got to be able, but you got to rely on what got you and where and why did we get there?
Let's throw some little screen passes or a wide out, you know, whatever. You throw it out to the guy who steps back from the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's throw some of those like sure plays. Get the ball in the air. I don't know. It left me wanting more. When we picked
the Browns to cover the 6-point, my dad and I picked in our little pick'em thing, the Browns to cover the 6-point spot. We said this probably isn't going to happen, and then we were right there at the end of the game. And that's all I have to say. I'm done with this conversation. Go Brownies. Super Bowl, baby.
All right, let's keep hope alive, man. I'm rooting for him. I hope Baker proves me wrong. I hope one day he can come and plant the Oklahoma flag in my front yard.
Oh, you know what? If the Browns win the Super Bowl with Baker Mayfield at quarterback, and if he is not willing to do that, I will wave a big Oklahoma flag. I'm sure I can get one from my friend who's an Oklahoma fan.
Sounds good, man. It's a date, man. It's a date. Mark it down. All right. Do we have anything else?
February 2022.
That was a pretty good. Would you rather, man? We went for like 20 minutes on a different sport. So that's called generating the conversation right there.
Oh yeah, there you go. Perfect.
All right, well, I don't think we need to talk anymore. If anything that you had left, let's save it for next week. We're already well past our self-imposed deadline, as we always are. So, nonetheless, we appreciate everyone listening. Make sure, if you haven't, check out the Quest for the Best. We got some more great shows coming up. This week's roundtable, or this month's roundtable, will be out on Friday, where coaches will share, if they could be the best in the world at some part of coaching, what would they choose? So, we got some very interesting answers. Some great.
Well, I know Mike right now, the positivity of the Browns would not be where Mike's best quality of coaching would be. The positivity of the Browns. I don't know.
Hey, you know, I'm just trying to keep a positive spirit if I can. So anyway, nonetheless, thank you for checking us out tonight. We really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.